Hi everyone, welcome back to the Foul Hour. Today I'm joined by Ian Paget of Logo Geek fame. Ian is a graphic designer from Manchester who's not just running the Logo Geek brand and community, but he's also running as a creative director and is a new family man too. On today's episode, we jump into a bunch of topics, including whether you should niche down either on a service or in an industry, his origin story of how he got started with Logo Geek, also the services he provides and whether it's better to maybe work as a generalist for a few years before you find a specific target or a specific idea you want to chase or practice, whether that's web or logos or branding. But just overall, it was an amazing conversation to sit down with Ian and actually hear some things from him I've never heard before on a podcast. Now, before we get started with today's show, a quick shout to our sponsors, Skillshare. If you'd like to learn skills, like Ian has for logo design, going to Skillshare is a great way and a great place to start. You can learn from graphic designers such as Aaron Draplin, Paul Scher, and even people like George Bokua. Sorry, George, if I pronounce your name wrong, but he does an amazing course on using grids with logo design. And you can access all those courses and 30,000 other ones with 2 free months of Skillshare by going to skl.sh/cfowlerdesign and signing up with a new account for 2 free months of unlimited access. Again, that's 2 free months of Skillshare with skl.sh/cfowlerdesign or using the link down in the description. Right, let's get on with today's show. Hi everyone, and welcome back to the Fowler Hour. Today I'm joined by the mighty logo geek, the magnificent Ian Paget. Ian, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm really good. I'm so happy to be on your show. I've known you for a number of years now, so it's good to be able to catch up because we haven't spoken ages, but I'm very honoured to be on your show.
Thank you very much. I mean, hearing your podcast was one of the reasons I want to turn this into an actual podcast. So awesome. for those who are listening who might not know who Ian is, Ian is the logo geek. If you type in logo design UK and Google, it's who comes up at the top, pretty much. And Ian's been running his own podcasts since the middle of 2017 as well, with many great designers and creatives on there as well, including one of my favorite episodes with a copyright lawyer, which I think is a very important thing that not enough people are talking about. So Ian, for people who might not know who you are, can you give us a brief high level who you are, what you do?
Okay, so I'm a graphic designer. Most people know me as Logo Geek, primarily because I focus on logo design. I have a podcast around the topic. And I offer clients logo design services. But I also have a part-time job where I work on where I work as creative director for a web design agency. So that kind of keeps me secure financially, and then everything else I'm just focusing on the rest of the time.
So just kind of that sounds new to me, creative director at a web design firm. How new is that role?
Sorry? Oh, no, I've been in that company for just over 10 years.
Oh, so you moved
and
up.
Logo Geek started as a side venture, but I got to this point where it was such a stretch that I'd be going to work, coming home, and then I'd have loads of emails, loads of social posts, loads of social comments, and it just became overwhelming. So I decided one day, I think it's about time that I picked one of these things. And I decided, okay, I'm going to hand in my notice. So I went in, spoke to them, handed in my notice, and they offered me a part-time venture. So we cut my days down, and I've been like that for about 3 years now. But yeah. For me, it gives me stability because I've got this job where I can work on interesting web design projects with some big companies. But I've also got time to focus on my logo design services, podcast community.
It's interesting that you've kind of, most people would have, obviously you did pick Logo Geek. You picked Logo Geek to hand in your notice.
Yeah.
So what was it in that conversation that kind of swung you back around to say, actually, obviously the stability is a big point, but there must have been some internal shift to say, actually, we're going to go into the creative director role.
Yeah, okay, so it's interesting that we've gone down this path. So for me, I never wanted to go freelance. That was never my plan. My goal was just to keep working up the ladder, work for different companies, maybe work into a branding agency in London, work on bigger projects, and basically work within a company. I found any time I worked at home, I got distracted. I found it quite stressful because everything was all on you, and I just thought freelance wasn't for me. But it was just more the primary reason why I decided LogoGeek was because all of the people that I admired, be that like Paul Rand would not be known if he didn't do his own stuff. He wouldn't be working on the type of projects that he wasn't that he worked on if he didn't go freelance. You got people like James Dyson. He wouldn't be de I wouldn't be admiring him and his story and how he developed the vacuum cleaner if he didn't do it on his own. So I was thinking, in order to do what I want to do within my life, I should focus on that, and it's a I'd be a fool not to do that. But as for keeping that job, I always had that in the back of my mind that I didn't really want to go freelance. So once the option came up of doing part time, to me it just seemed like a total no-brainer because I still had the security. I still it allowed me to still work within a team. It allowed me to still work on big projects because we've been working with companies like GSK and Barclaycard. As a freelancer, most of my clients are like small mom and pop shops pretty much. So it just gave me this taster of what it would be like to work for myself. So I thought, yeah, that sounds like an ideal situation. I pretty much accepted it right away once the idea came up. And yeah, I've kept it like that for a number of years now, and that's allowed me, it's given me financial security. So in terms of like getting a mortgage, when you're a freelancer, loan companies don't like that. the random incomes that come in from freelance. So it's allowed me to get a mortgage and remortgage, and it's given me stability because I now have a daughter. My partner doesn't work, so having that guaranteed income is great, but I still have time to do things like my podcast, my own clients, build a community and stuff like that. I'm still able to do everything that I want to do. It's just a little bit slower than I like it to be.
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with that. Obviously, things take time, and it's actually a discussion I've had with multiple people recently is that because things move so quickly on the internet, rather than, say, the corporate ladder, everyone is feeling that, and I've said this for many years, that 6 months on the internet is like 5 years in real life. That's how I kind of summarize the fast change and the fast pace of everything moves. So you to say, oh, it's going a bit slower than maybe I would have thought. But if this was your side business 30 years ago, it would have been progress as progress. And to see the community you've built, the progress you've made in terms of LogoGeek and growing that, and then also having a new family as well. Firstly, congratulations for that.
Thank you.
It's tough being a new parent, so I'm sure that this first year is going to be a great roller coaster for you. But I think it's such a mind shift on that, isn't it? That you do you actually feel like things are going slow and you'd want them to go faster, or is it just that everyone else is moving so fast around you?
No, I feel like everything has grown way beyond anything I ever imagined. But it's more there's certain things I would like to do that I thought about 3 years ago that I just haven't done, but I've got plans to do them next year. And the main reason for that is because most of those things don't make money. and I think even if I did go full time, I probably still wouldn't have time to do those things. So I'll probably be very much in a pretty much exactly the same place, even if I was full time, but I'd maybe have a larger library of work on my website, and there would be a few other things that I'm planning to do that I would have done, but who knows.
You probably would have been running back and forth with the bank quite a lot as well for your mortgage.
Which would have been a pain.
That's something I don't think people realize. I mean, I've watched YouTubers have this problem in the past, and still to this day, where even though they can prove they have consistent income, the ads go up and down, so the money changes. And it's the same with freelancers, and I don't think people realize this.
Well, yeah. I mean, for me, when I wanted a mortgage, I couldn't factor in any of my freelance income, even though it was more than what I was getting in my part-time position. So the only finances that they could check against was part-time salary, which is ridiculous because it meant that there was only a certain amount that I could actually borrow. Thankfully, it was enough. But
is that because it's seen as a liability? Kind of freelance work.
I think so. I mean, there's ways of doing it. You have to have 3 years worth of freelance income, and it needs to be fairly consistent and stable. I don't know any more than that, just because I haven't needed to try it. Probably the next time when it comes around to remortgaging, I'm probably going to have that situation, because I do see myself eventually going full time. But yeah, it is something that is on the back of my mind, and that is one of the primary reasons why I've stuck to that job.
So when it comes to looking, obviously I'm not going to pin you on a number for when you might want to go full time with Logo Geek, but the other things I see you doing with Logo Geek are kind of reflective of diversifying income, of building personal brand, of spreading that out a bit so it's more of a stable income, as you say, or potentially could lead to one. So when it, for people who might not know, Ian obviously is Logo Geek. He has his blog, he has his website, he does, as he's explained, the part-time position, but also you have an online community. I believe you have a private community as well, and a podcast. Yes. So with the community itself, you mentioned briefly before we got started that it's kind of still exploding, and it has been since almost day one. So what has been the benefit of having this community? And how many members are there now? That's the question.
Benefit of having the community. I mean, a lot of people think that having a community has a lot of benefits, like income. And firstly, I'm just going to say that is not the case. For the amount of work that it takes to build a community, there's very little financial gain. And I know other people in the creative space that have built communities, and they've tried monetizing them and they haven't been able to. So, you know, financially, it's not great, but that's not why I did it originally. Running and managing a community, for me, I've learned so much from the people in there, because it's people at different levels. So people ask a question. Sometimes a question comes up and it's like, you know what, I don't actually know the answer to that. And then I see more experienced people answering it, and I learn from that. I mean, pretty much everything that's going in the group, I'm seeing and reading, with the exception of a couple of comments that I just, you know, there's just too much in there. But yeah, for me, I'm learning from more experienced people, and younger people in there as well. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but when you start to teach people or advise people, it clarifies your knowledge, because I tend to find that you know something and you just do it automatically without even thinking about it. But when someone asks you to articulate that into some kind of response, you can sometimes question yourself. You're like, is that the right answer? So for me, you know, giving responses provides a lot of clarity for me in terms of my knowledge, and it helps fill any gaps. So there's that aspect to it as well. And I mean, it feels good being part of the community and knowing that I'm making an impact and providing support for people. And I guess on the financial side of it, even though, you know, the amount of time I put into it, there's easier ways of making money. If I do release anything, I have an audience to launch it to. So I did a free box set of ebooks called the Logo Designers Box Set. And when I launched that, I had a load of emails. And I think that email list long term will have value. It currently does in terms of like affiliate marketing. But again, the cost and time that goes into it, although it's an income, there's easier ways of making that money. But like I said, for me, it really is about giving to the community and learning from the community and knowing that I'm making a difference.
Do you think you would have ever started a community page if you were full-time logo geek rather than with your part-time role?
Oh, for sure. I mean, in terms of diversifying my income, we've spoken about the podcast, and my podcast gets a sponsor. So one of the reasons why I've been able to get a sponsor is because I have an audience. So there is that side of it. But I possibly would have got that just from, you know, my Twitter following as well. So yeah, I think I would have done, because for me, I see it as part of my long-term goals. So surrounding Logo Geek, as you know, I do want to diversify my income. I like the idea of having lots of different areas where income's coming from. So I have a sponsorship for my podcast, like I mentioned. I would like to start creating paid products to help the community, you know, be that training courses or books or other types of paid content. So for me, the community from the beginning was for selfish reasons. You know, I wanted to have this hub where I could promote these sponsored pieces of content or paid pieces of content to that. So if I was full time, yes, I would have done that.
Interesting. But it's good to hear that, because when people talk about running communities, I'm part of the Sean West community, for example.
Yeah.
And that's a paid for community. And when I compare that to other people's communities, it's the same stressors that come up every single time. It's overload, it's management, and it's finding time, because there is a bottleneck when you are one or a small team. And looking towards the future of your community, do you think that it's viable to run a private community on a platform like Facebook or on Slack or Discord or even what are some other sites? On a social media platform rather than maybe your own site. Obviously, I know you have your private community, but just as the general question.
I know with Facebook, I think the terms and conditions, there's something in there that you can't charge people to access it, but I have seen people use it as a form of paid community, but there's other things that they access.
Yeah, I'll say I've definitely seen a open like a paywall for certain Facebook groups.
Yeah, I mean, I might be wrong about the terms conditions, but I swear I heard it somewhere. But yeah, I mean, people use Facebook for paid communities. Even now, I've got like a separate paid thing. I still think Facebook is actually the best platform for communities, just because I think that there's a habit with social media. People just, I mean, I do anyway, I just automatically check certain apps on my phone. It's just part of my like routine. I just check that one, check Facebook, check Twitter and so on. And I think the issue with any other kind of platform is you need to go out of your way. But with something like Facebook, you're already on it. And that's why I feel like Facebook is an amazing platform for communities. I think there's flaws with it because, you only see post in the order that they've been posted in and based on people's comments. And there's no proper categorization of information, which you can do with premium options. But, still today, I think it's the best platform out there for community.
I think I agree with you to an extent. I left Facebook 6 months ago. I was just sick of the platform in general. Not so much the communities, but just the absolute basically chaos that site has become, in my opinion. Because in comparison to when I was first got on the platform, let's say 15, 16, so 8, 9 years ago now.
Yeah.
It's so diluted and bloated, and whilst the people are there, for me, the people often weren't enough to hold it up. But it's so great to hear that the community is still growing, and that because I remember you talking about your first few, what was the first 6 months or something, you got like 5,000 people. It was some ridiculous number.
Yeah, it was just insane. Day one, it hit like 200 people. It was ridiculous. And it's not growing in those numbers. I mean, maybe there are that number of people trying to access the group, but I've got some element of quality control there. But quality control
in inverted commas, just like as in you're a spam bot, you're just from Fiverr, we're gonna spam your links.
That is the one of the biggest issues with Facebook, as you know.
Just massive amounts of spam everywhere. And I'm so glad to hear that it's continually bringing positivity to your world. Yeah. Although it is stressful at times, it seems like it's actually made a big positive change. And I know the Logo Geek group definitely helped me. So if you're on Facebook and using Facebook, I would highly recommend checking it out for sure. Obviously, make sure you fill out the questions Ian puts in the box to apply.
Yes, you do. If you don't fill them out, you don't get in. Because there's so... I've got about 3,000 pending members.
Oh, my God.
And I skim through it. I don't spend that much time going through there. If someone gives lazy responses, I just decline them. Or if they don't fill out the responses, there's settings to do it automatically. I just do bulk options, and if you don't fill out the answers, you don't get in.
Well, there you go. You heard it first. that's good to know though. And okay, so kind of moving away from the community stuff, something I wanted to bring up and ask you about was, you titled yourself on obviously the show, at the beginning of the show, you call yourself a graphic designer. You work as a creative director at a web design firm. So you've got fingers in multiple different sections of the design world. But when it comes to your online branding, you are Logo Geek. And from an outsider's perspective, it may, without knowing that you do the other stuff, it may seem that you just do logo design purely. You don't touch anything else. Which I would say is niching down on a particular service.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of talk in the industry at the moment as more people have access to the design world, to design education, and are entering the industry either on their own or starting their own thing. But there's a lot of talk about niching down for industry and providing, being the best at one thing in a certain industry. But the way I see your branding is slightly different. It's you are niching on one service. So was that an intentional decision, or was that something that you thought, you know what, I could start with logos and then maybe build it out, and it just didn't happen? Or your SEO game, because I know you're hyped on your SEO game and really hot on that. So where was it, an intentional switch to that, or is it just something that's become over time?
Okay, so there was no plan. I think it comes from like my origin story. So in terms of how Logo Geek started, I'd always done a lot of projects on the side of my full-time job. And for me, that's always been a way to experiment with different things. So, you know, growing up, it might have been CD covers, it might have been computer game artwork, movie posters, you know, anything that was kind of fun. Most of that, I didn't make any money from. It was just fun projects to kind of push my creativity. But there was a long period of time when I collaborated with some game developer friends, and we started to work on computer game artwork. And when we first started, we got all the mechanics working, we had a specific staff for it, and then we had Chillingo, which is owned by EA Games, suddenly get interested in it. So it became a big deal. We ended up having to redesign it because they said anything that's bright and colorful sells. So we did a load of work at the beginning that might have took maybe a year, and then we had to redesign it based on what they'd done. So we ended up spending between us on the side of other projects, because, you know, none of us was making any money from this at that point. And we spent nearly 4 years working on that project, which was awesome. You know, it's an amazing experience, and some of that work is some of the best work I've ever done. But I was exhausted. You know, I was working in a demanding creative director role full time, and then coming home and having to do, you know, animation sheets, background graphics, lots of different bits and pieces. You know, I was even doing it on like New Year's Eve, 5 minutes before everyone was counting down, because it just needed to get done. I enjoyed it, but I was tired. I don't want to do side projects anymore. And then I think about 2 weeks went by and I'm like, I want a project. I want something to work on. And I think the issue with the game project is it was just a big project. It was a huge project for anyone, even full time. And I thought, what if it was something smaller? And my partner at the time, we was eating dinner, and she said, Ian, you're really good at logo design. Why don't you do that? And, you know, I thought, yeah, I love working on logo design. I'd love to learn more about it as a topic. I found in my full-time job, even though I would work on Legos, it was maybe like once every 4 months. And I find with any skill set, you kind of feel like you have to start learning again. And it was so frustrating. So even though what I did was good, I just never felt like it was quite right. So yeah, I decided to focus on that. When a project came in, I mean, at the beginning it was just for family and friends, but I'd work on a project. After like 2 weeks, project was done. If I wanted another one, I could choose to have another one, or I could take a break. And I mean, at that time, I started a website, which was Logo Geek, and that was just because the domain was there. And it grew. So there was no plan at the beginning, but one of the reasons why it has grown and succeeded is because it is niche. All the content that I'm creating and writing is around logo design. When I talk on social media, it is about logo design, and as a byproduct of focusing, everything has grown. And that was an accident. You know, seeing my results on Google suddenly ranking on like page, you know, between page one and page three, for me that was a game changer. Because I suddenly had inquiries coming in, and then it's like, because I have an interest in marketing and SEO and social media marketing, it was just, as it grew, my interest in it grew, and I've invested more time in it, and it's evolved. Like when I first started it, it was just meant to be logo designed for friends and family, just as a side project. I love going to Comic Con, and I thought something like Logo Geek could attract some like you know, fun projects from Comic-Con. So yeah, I don't know if that's answered your question, but for me, there was no great plan, but as a byproduct of it focusing on a niche, it has grown. In terms of projects I take on, all the leads that come in, pretty much everyone just wants a logo. Do I offer other things? Yes and no. For logo design, I have a very linear process. I have template emails. Every step of the entire process, I know exactly what I'm going to be doing, how long it's going to take. I know how to respond to certain things. And I can get through a project fairly quickly, and I'm able to sell it at a fairly high price as well. So for me, it's very formulaic. Anything outside of that, I don't have template emails. I don't have quotes. I don't have anything. So yes, I do have the things. I've added on things like stationery, because that's easy to add on. You know, that's easy to quote up. Again, I've got templates for that. Anything that's more bespoke, it depends who the client is and if it interests me. So for example, I had a guy approach me a couple of years back. He had a huge budget and he wanted me to work on some packaging for his product. And amazingly, that product is now in Walmart. the guy approached me when it was a startup, and I've helped him to turn it into like this multi-million business, which is insane. So yes, sometimes I work on other things, but it depends on the project. And I'm just conscious that anything outside of things I've already got templates for and the process for is just extra work even before I've been paid.
Especially when it's not something you would do yourself, I assume. So some stuff you wouldn't be able to do yourself.
Well, if someone wanted a website, I can build a website. If someone wanted exhibition stands, I can do that. If someone wanted print-based, I can pretty much do anything. I've got experience with it. Web design work, I mean, to be honest, I do tend to pass that over to someone else just because it's a time suck, but I could do it if I wanted to.
So when it comes to picking projects, you're more focused on what is going to be the most fulfilling for you. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, most interesting, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially for people listening at home, it's a question that I get asked a lot is, should I be just doing this or that or picking something and going with it? And my answer typically is you have one of two choices. You pick something and do it for 6 months and see if you like it or not, so you can get the time to go deep on it. Or you just try a bit of everything and see what you get most work from or what you most enjoy. So when it comes to passing that knowledge on to other people, what would you say in response to that question? As in, if I were to niche Ian, do you think that's a good idea? Do you think niching down is a good idea for someone starting? Or do you think they need experience of, say, working in an agency or exploring different areas first?
I think if you're just starting out, if you just come straight out of school or uni, or you know, you're teaching yourself, personally, I would go and work for an agency, be a generalist, and learn as much as you can about everything. For me, I know I'm focusing on logo design, but I've done like pretty much everything in my career as a generalist. But for me, the things that have always interested me is like the e-commerce projects I do. I like the technical aspect of it, or the conversion, you know, how you can increase the conversion rates of a website. But I also love like technical illustrations. And logo design is like this nice balance of all of that stuff. So for me, you know, it probably took about 10 years to find what really fascinated me. But I mean, in terms of attracting clients, it's easier to attract clients as a specialist. So yeah, if you're just starting out, I would go and work for a company for a few years, learn everything you can, and then if you do want to go on your own and focus on something, I think it's quite rare that you'll be able to find a job at an agency where you are a specialist on, say, like logo design. I don't think that job exists. So if you did want to do that, you have to start your own thing. And one of the main reasons why people speak about niching down is because you can hyper-focus your marketing. You've got more chance of, you know, ranking on Google. You're more likely to become known as a specialist rather than a generalist. You know, everyone's a generalist, but if you want someone that's really good at logo design, you might think of me. You know, I might be the first person that comes to mind. And you can specialize further. I mean, you could just do logo designs for cosmetic companies. And then if there's a cosmetic logo design project that comes along, who do you then think of? You think of that individual person. So I think once you've got that knowledge and you know what you most enjoy and what you're most interested in going deep on, then specializing makes a lot of sense. Not just because, you know, it's easier to attract people, but because you can really become the specialist on that topic. You can read every single book on that topic. You can create content all about that topic. You can become the go-to source and you can become the go-to resource for that specific niche. And I've spoken about this processes. If you have a productized business, you can create processes that you can document and you can do that yourself, and you can employ other people that can just take your process and run through that. And if you specialize, that's easier to do than being a generalist, because being a generalist, it's unpredictable. You know, one day you could be doing a website, the next day you could be doing a brochure. You can do all of the processes and stuff like that, but if you're a one-man band, it's just a lot of effort. It's easier if you do one thing and you do one thing well and you become known for that one thing, because you're more likely to get people come to you interested in that. You'll get more referrals, and you know, when someone wants someone to come onto their podcast to speak about a specific topic, they're going to choose you as that go-to person. There's loads of benefits to it.
Yeah, and to go back to one of the points you made about halfway through that explanation, sure, which was just a fabulous explanation, thank you. You said it took you about 10 years to find what you really loved doing in design. Whilst you loved working in design as a generalist, to really find that balance between, as you say, between technical illustration and web design, for example, to find logo design as a passion. Many people, and I'm just going to play member of audience right now, would say, sure, it's going to take me 10 years to find out what I want to do, Ian. It's going to take me 10 years. Ian, I've just spent 4 years in university. I want to do something I love now. Right now.
We'll do that. I mean, if you want to specialize, you want to pick something and you want to go for it, if you want it to work, you need to focus on it. I've been focused on logo design for, I don't know how long, 7 years, 8 years, and I'm still focused on that. So I think if you're going to choose to go down that funnel and narrow down to that one thing, I think you're kind of pigeonholing yourself too early on something, because you're going to become known for that. But if you do change your mind in 10 years, you can start again and pivot to something else. And if you do everything well and build up a personal brand, you're still going to maintain a lot of that authority. You just need to pivot and change. So yeah, I think you can start off niching down. I just think it's a missed opportunity. You know, when you're young and you haven't done any of these things before, it's the best time to learn, especially if you don't have a mortgage, you don't have a family, you've kind of got all this time and you can spend that time trying different things and get an experience from within agencies. I see a lot of people trying to start out freelance on their own, and they're having to go through everything the hard way because they haven't had any prior experience. But when you work for another agency, which you will likely need to go in as a generalist, you're going to learn how to do sales. You're going to see how they sell in meetings. You'll be able to get paid to screw up. And if you work for a good company, you should have good managers, and those managers can guide you. They can put you in situations that you wouldn't have done on your own accord, you know, like doing presentations to CEOs and so on. So you're going to learn a lot of skills working within an agency. And then, like I said, once you've got to a point where you're like, I really enjoy this thing, then you can go out there and focus on that. But you've got all this like life knowledge of how to attract clients, how to how to fire a client when everything goes horrendously wrong. People don't think of those things, and you'll learn all of that in an agency,
especially when you don't have so much responsibility on your shoulders.
Yes, yeah. And like I said, if you don't have the responsibilities like I do now, I'm like in my mid-30s, I've got a family now and I've got a mortgage, and like I have to make an income. So pivoting now would be not a mistake. That's not the right word, but it would be I'd probably have a loss of income, because I've got an income. I've got leads coming in without having to do any work. So for me to get, if I need extra money, it's not hard to do that now, because I'm in this fortunate position where I get leads coming in. I just need to respond to them. If the price is right, they generally go ahead. If I was to pivot, that's going to be harder to start.
So again, for people listening at home, the reason I played that question to Ian was because I expected him to say exactly the answer he did, which was, it took me 10 years to find what I loved doing, but it took me another 8 years to build up the reputation to be able to have this authority.
Can I add something on to say, I know I say it's the thing that I love. There are times when it's like, I hate doing this. I have those moments, but I think with niching down, you need to stick to it. And we spoke about diversifying. One of the reasons why I do other things, related things, is it makes my day more interesting. If I was just going to sit down and only design logos 24/7 and flip them out like pancakes, I would 100% get bored with that. But there's other things that you can add on to your niche to allow you to become an authority in it.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with having a public facing presence, but also take other things on.
Yeah, which is what I do. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. But again, for people listening at home, it may not have taken Ian exactly 10 years to find what he loved doing with logos.
Yeah, roughly.
But but then to build up the reputation on top of that also takes a considerable amount of legwork, which I hope you're very proud of, Ian, because it's a monumental task to build up the reputation you've got, let alone in 8 years for that one thing. It's incredible to see the progress that not just yourself has made, but the brand and the community you've built around it. But for people listening at home, that means that there is always opportunity to try something and change it, or try something and realize you don't enjoy that. You shouldn't be fighting at every single turn to say, no, I have to do this. And as you build up your personal brand, as Ian builds up his, as I build up mine, you become recognizable for that particular thing, but also as a great person to work with, which I think is a very underrated thing. And I'm sure you've had inquiries come through from word of mouth testimonials of what it was like to work with you, regardless of whether it was for a logo or whether it was for a website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Looking kind of, as I say, you brought up all those priorities that have changed in the last, 7 months, should we say, for the big ones. It's kind of the next question I wanted to ask you was that not only are you running your Logo Geek business, your side hustle, but you are also working your part-time job. You have a family now.
Yes.
As a new father of a 7th-month-old, which is in of itself an entirely new priority and challenge.
Yeah.
And how have you found that dynamic shift? Obviously, you knew this was coming, so you probably had some time to prepare for it.
Yeah. But
being a new father, how has that impacted, obviously, hopefully positive and maybe stressful too, but over the last 7 months or so to either yourself or your routine or your business?
Okay, so there was a lot that I did prior to Evie coming into this world. So
excellent. That's a lovely, beautiful name, by the way.
I knew that I was going to have a massive change. So prior to her coming into this world, I had a 9-month runway.
Really? It's 9 months?
I could plan for 9 months that, okay, within, you know, after finding out, okay, I have this amount of time, I want to take off at least 2 weeks once my partner gave birth. And that in itself was hard because they say 9 months, but it could be 8 months, it could be it could be a longer period of time. So trying to plan for that was hard. I needed to buy a new car because I had a tiny 1-liter Toyota Yaris and there was no space in the back for a pram. So I had to do a lot of saving up and working really hard to make an income to have a runway so I could take a number of weeks off. So I was there. And I could also buy prams, bottles, sterilizers. There's a lot of stuff that you need to buy. So, you know, financially, that was tough, but I just worked my ass off. I worked pretty much every hour I could to make that income. And there was that month before, my partner was huge, and I'm thinking, you're gonna give birth like 2 weeks, 3 weeks before,
gonna touch you and you're gonna pop.
So I was trying to wind down a little bit earlier, so I had this whole month. But that's when I started building my community, and I started really focusing on affiliate marketing. I'd done a lot of affiliate marketing previously, but since I've been a dad, I've been more intentional with it, and I've been able to make on average about $1,000 extra through affiliate marketing.
That's great to hear.
Yeah, so there's been that. It's not easy. My partner does a lot. My partner's a stay-at-home mum now. We just think that that's the right thing to do. I know you can get childcare and stuff like that, but to be honest, the cost of childcare is pretty much the same amount of money that my partner would probably make. So for us, it just makes sense for her to stay at home. So I've got the extra expense of a child. my partner doesn't work. So I've been a lot more intentional. My price is up on my projects. I've been able to still do everything. There was that first month which I pretty much left free, so that was adjusting, and that was hard at the beginning for anyone that's been a new parent. What I do in terms of my schedule, I have my 3 days where I work for an agency, and then I've got Thursdays, Fridays, and the weekend if I need it for anything else. So I book in one project a week, which is manageable. And I have my podcast. So when I try and do all of that, it's really hard. Just having the time for it. But you just have to work through it. You know, sometimes I can be sat here editing and then I need to run and, you know, make bottles or feed Evie. But yeah, you cope. But I would say one thing for me, with my freelance stuff, I've never really had a proper plan. But now I've been a lot more intentional because I'm well aware that when I have time to work, I need to make the most of that time and really focus and make sure that I get things done when I got that time there. So yeah, I've been managing it and surprisingly it's all still been going really well. It's a very different lifestyle. I don't get a lot of time to do things that I would want to do for fun, you know, just because my priority is Evie and my partner, you know, making sure that we got enough income and that I'm there for them when they need me. So, you know, a lot of sacrifices.
Yeah, totally. And hopefully largely positive ones.
It's been great. It's amazing. I mean, anyone that's had a kid, they would know, even though it's hard, every day has little special moments. You can wake up and you're absolutely tired, getting ready for your day. And, you know, I might go and have a shower. I'll come out. And then she's woke up. She's got her head up looking at me with this big grin. And it just kind of makes your morning. And I've always, one thing that I've always done is try to book things in through the year so I have something to look forward to. And now I've got loads of things to look forward to, you know, like her first word. What's her first word going to be? You know,
logo, things probably.
Things like going to school. You know, there's like a whole lifetime of little things to look forward to. Christmas, can't wait for Christmas. It's going to be really fun with her. But yeah, it gives you lots of special little moments and there's just little things every day that just makes you smile and it sounds cheesy. It kind of fills a hole in you that you didn't know was there.
It's given you this.
Yeah,
it's
quite special having a child. Yeah.
So it's given you a bit more of a new perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
And it's something that I'm so not in touch with or in tune with at all. I'm like, babies are kind of cute sometimes, but it depends on whose they are.
Can I just say, you know, one thing that is bizarre. And I know they teach it in school, and I know everybody knows where babies come from. But when you see a child develop and you know, like you see all the scans and you see them grow and you start raising them and teaching them stuff, it puts a whole different perspective on life in general. It's like, that's amazing that this child wouldn't exist if I hadn't met my partner and, you know, like a whole sequence of events, she wouldn't exist. And it's just insane that how amazing life is, you know, that's where humans come from and that's where all of us have come from. And I mean, I think a lot of us, I do anyway, take things a little bit too seriously. And there's probably more important things in life than trying to write a book, you know?
Well, there definitely is now that you've got Evie, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And even if it's not having a child, having that shift, just a large shift in perspective or a large shift in priorities,
yeah,
you have to adapt really quickly. And it sounds like you've found a way to do that. And is there anything that you attribute to that? Or is it just a case of a baby has turned up and I've got to prepare for it? Or is there something you turn to or an author or a piece of content that inspired you to kind of pick up these, shift the patterns? Or is it a case of you adapt as it went?
I don't think you can prepare for it, Connor.
No, I don't either.
It's like a slap in the face.
Yeah.
So, I mean, day one of being a parent is, A, you've not had any sleep already because you've been going through, I mean, I'm not the mother, so
yeah.
I've not done the hard bit, but you're there for them and it's a long, tiring day. And then you come home and like, they do not sleep. They're awake like every hour and you don't get any sleep. And adjusting to that is hard. I think that the best piece of advice I got was from my partner's mum. She said to us, Ian, you look after Sayward. Sayward, you look after Evie. And it just meant that any time Evie woke up in the night, and it was normally for breastfeeding, so I can't really do anything anyway, I stayed in bed. And when I needed to go to work, I just slept downstairs. And I just made sure that the house was clean, cooking was done. My partner had food when she needed it. She had water. You know, I did everything around surrounding my partner. And that just meant that we had this nice system. So my partner really could just focus on feeding, sleeping. And I haven't read any books. We've just been coping with it. but obviously, it gets a lot easier. It's a lot easier now. She's 7 months. She's in her own room. And she started to sleep through the night. But that first week, that was hard. And that advice I got from my partner's mum, that was the best. Because the first day we were both getting up and then we were both exhausted. And it, I don't know if you've ever had a time when you just haven't slept for like 48 hours or whatever, you're just not functioning properly. So yeah, that was a game changer for us. That simple piece of advice.
Totally. Teamwork makes the dream work. That's the thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It needs to be teamwork.
And I think that's such an important thing for, obviously it's very poignant in you being a new father, but just in general, because more often than not, either as a freelancer or a solo business owner, you rely so much on yourself when you could actually be asking for help. You could be asking for someone to help you with even small tasks or opinions or advice. And as your partner's mum said, sometimes it's one sentence or one phrase that can really flip a switch. But unless you are open to it, you'd never find it.
I would say another thing that's been important is I've been quite clear on my partner when I need to work, because you know, the only income in the household is coming from me doing work. And I mean, it hasn't been easy, because there's been times when, you know, I've booked in to record a podcast at like 8, and we're trying to put her to bed, and it's been hard, because I've had to make a few changes, because one thing that I started to do was just booking in them like I would normally. So I'd book it in at 8, and obviously Evie's in the next room, she can hear me through the wall, and because she can hear me and the house wasn't quiet like it normally would be, she just didn't sleep. So I've had to adjust with that. And it's just work. You just need to work around these things. Once you acknowledge that there's something's not quite working, you just need to adjust and adapt. And I think it's the case. It's like that with anything in your freelance life in general. If something doesn't work, change it.
Be open to change as well.
Yeah, be open to change. You have to. Otherwise, it's not going to work out for you.
Totally. Well, I hope it continues to be a good year moving into 2020 with Evie. It sounds like she's got a great set of parents to help her along the way.
I hope so.
So kind of the last thing to wrap the show up with, Ian, we are recording this. It's almost Christmas. Ian's donning his beautiful red Santa Christmas jumper. But what are some things that have got your attention for 2020? Obviously, Evie, we know that.
Yeah.
But what else is coming for yourself, and even what's just interesting you at the moment?
Okay, I'm going to give you some background. And hopefully this answer isn't too long.
No, go for it.
Something that I've been working on for a while, and it's after attending an event, there was a group of us that decided to do a mastermind group. So what we do is we meet up every like 3 months, and we update on what each of us are doing and ask for advice. So as a byproduct of that, I have quarter one plan. And I've got a lot of help and advice from the guys that I'm in that mastermind. So I do have a plan, which I don't normally do. But again, some more background with my podcast. As you will know, Connor, I have a sponsor, and I normally do get sponsorship by seasons. So it's normally I get agreement for sponsorship on a season. I need to wait ages for that income to come in, and I'm kind of, you know, getting all stressed trying to do both client work and a podcast all at the same time. And then that season will be gone, and then I just have to wait ages to try and get some income for the next one. But FreshBooks, who has sponsored 5 of my 6 seasons, they've I spoke to them about a month ago because they've been planning their quarter one budgets, and they was interested in sponsoring another season. And I just threw the idea, oh, maybe I can do 2 seasons by June. So what they've done is I thought they would sponsor two seasons. They sponsored an entire 6 month worth of content. So I'm going to be doing my podcast weekly from now on.
Hell yeah.
Just one week.
Yes.
That's a permanent basis, you know, from now on it is weekly.
Oh, that's amazing news.
So I have that. And because there is an income from that, and I have this reliable, predictable income next year, I know exactly how much money I'm going to be making, guaranteed.
Yay.
I have decided to set aside some time to do something I've been wanting to do forever, and it's not for money. I've been dying to write a book for years, and I've got this plan for a series of books. And
is by it fiction, quarter non-fiction? One,
it's a logo design book. I've been wanting to do it for ages. It kind of helps to complete my funnel that doesn't exist. I've got you know, when people talk about sales funnels, you build up this audience, you funnel them into this thing, and then they buy your products. I've got this funnel without a thing at the bottom, so that will hopefully fill that, you know, finish that off. But I'm not doing it for that. It's just something, you know, for like I would say maybe 10 years in a row, every New Year's resolution is I'm going to write a book. But this time I've actually got a plan. I've got week by week of what content I'm going to be writing. So that's going to be one of my main things. And you can be accountable for this as well. I am writing at least one book next year. Financially set aside, times are booked in, so it's going to happen.
I'm pre-ordering it now, Ian.
Yeah, that's probably my main things, weekly podcast and definitely at least one book.
Awesome. So, well, to keep you accountable for that, I'm pre-ordering one of the books now, and I expect it.
Okay.
I expect it by the end of the year. In digital or printed format, one of the two.
Okay, deal. I'll do a signed copy for you, Connor.
Thank you, Ian. Well, it's great to hear. And I'm glad you found a mastermind. It's something I've been looking at for a long time. I just haven't quite found the right people yet, I think.
Yeah.
But those are some great goals for 2020. And I think from the sounds of it, they all sound achievable.
Oh, yeah. It's a quarter one plan. It's not goals. It's all booked in and planned. It's happening.
Even better. Even better. Yeah,
that's the major difference. My New Year's resolutions, which I don't like New Year's resolutions, my plans have never been actually booked in because paid client work always takes priority. And, well, you know how it goes. All the paid stuff always takes priority over anything else. And if you don't plan anything in, it doesn't happen. So now there is a plan. It's going to happen, Connor. It's happening.
Excellent. And on that note, Ian, thank you very much for being on this episode of The Foul Hour. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
And so where can people find you on the internet?
I think the easiest thing to do is to do a Google search for Logo Geek, and hopefully you'll find my website. But I'm generally most active on Twitter and Facebook. I do post on Instagram. I need to up my Instagram game next year as well, because I've been a bit lazy with it. But yeah, do a Google search for Logo Geek and you will find me.
Fabulous. All those links, guys, including a couple of others I'll throw into, will be down in the description for you today. And if you're listening to the show on Apple Podcasts or a platform you can rate the show on, please leave us a 5-star review and a comment about what you thought about of our show with Ian today. As always, we'll be back same time next week. Bye for now.